I'm not gonna lie to you, I'm a pretty strange guy. I've always been a loner, and I've always hated people for as long as I can remember. Which is why it's ironic that the scariest experiences of my life is associated with Valentine's Day. I was working after I graduated high school. I didn't want to go to college as I was really poor, and I didn't even know what I would want to do if I did go. My plan was to lay low for a little while and figure things out, maybe save up a little money. The gas station I worked at was the kind of place that grossed out visiting truckers. I remember this one time when a trucker stopped in. He saw me looking at my phone while I was waiting for him to get ready to pay for his beef jerky. He gave me a judgmental look and said I should take some responsibility for how bad the place looked. I didn't have the energy to explain that I wasn't the owner, so I just rang him out and asked if that was all he was going to order. He paid and left without another word. So yeah, it was one of those kinds of places. Anyway, it was Valentine's Day a couple of years back. I had volunteered to work the night shift because I made a couple of dollars more on the hour, which was always nice. Plus, it's normally pretty slow and there isn't much to do. I normally amuse myself by looking at memes on Reddit. But I remember on this particular night, the entire mood was different. I don't know what it was, but I had an ominous, foreboding feeling in my heart that night. And I'm not normally the kind of person who buys into the whole paranormal thing. I must have gotten that feeling around 12 a.m. I tried to brush it off as best I could, but I felt oddly on edge. The strangest thing was that I had worked plenty of night shifts before. I never had a feeling like this. I was so busy trying to calm myself down and fighting my own fear that I didn't even notice him. A man had come into the gas station. Must have been about 1:15 a.m. or so. I remember his face so vividly, so aged. His eyes were extremely off-putting. If you gazed into them for long enough, you would inevitably find yourself wondering about the guy's mental state. Suffice to say, he was a creepy man. He seemed to be in a rush. I remember noticing how swiftly he moved through the aisles, and he instinctually knew exactly what he needed. Didn't have to stop and think even once. Most people do. He came up to the register, looking to buy a small gardening shovel, duct tape, and a rope. I remember looking down at the items and immediately wondering if this guy was some sort of serial killer or something. That was the exact moment I got out of my own head. I stuttered when I asked him if he wanted anything else. He didn't say a word, just pointed, directly at the cigarettes behind my head. I placed a pack of Marlboro Lights on the counter and looked back at the man. He was holding up his hand with two fingers. It took me a second to figure out that he had wanted another pack of cigarettes. I rang everything up. I could hear his breathing increasing. It was as if he was annoyed that I wasn't rushing. I tried breaking the tension by making a joke. "Got a gardening day tonight, do ya?" His facial expression didn't change at all. He made direct eye contact with me and simply shook his head up and down. I told him that his total would be $34. He slapped down two 20s on the table, grabbed his items without a bag, and darted out of the gas station. I went outside to watch him leave. I know I'm not supposed to do that, but I couldn't help myself. I was so curious by this point. What was he buying those things for? Did I seriously just meet an actual serial killer? All of the wondering thoughts left my head immediately when I saw him slam on the brakes. He turned his truck around and began speeding back to the gas station. My body went into full panic mode. I ran back inside, closed the doors, locked them, put the clothes sign up, and I actually called the police. He pulled up outside of the gas station and put his truck in park. My heart was pounding in my chest. I screamed at the dispatch the address and then put the phone down on the counter. I mentally made peace with the fact that I might actually die, and I hoped that at least someone could hear me dying. I heard him start beating on the door trying to get in. The only weapon I had available was one of those shovels from the random utility aisles. I darted across the gas station and grabbed one, bracing myself. I screamed at him that the police were coming and he had no chance. I didn't believe the words as they left my mouth. The doors were made of some kind of fiber or plastic material. I think they were even bulletproof, so I knew I was safe for at least a little while. That was when he stopped pounding on the door. I thought he was going to drive his truck into the gas station to get inside, but thankfully the thought never struck his mind. He did, however, break one of the windows and throw a lit match inside. After that, he drove off into the night. I quickly put the fire out, and the police got there about 20 minutes after everything happened. One of the cops tried making a joke about this guy's attempt to burn the place down, and I was too dazed to hear it. I just remember the guy pity laughed at his own joke before walking back to his police car. I explained to them the entire situation from beginning to end. I still have no clue why he suddenly decided that he just wanted to hurt me. Perhaps he wanted one less potential witness. Maybe he was just a random psychopath. Maybe it was because he saw me peering back at him, and that triggered him. And as dramatic as this experience may have been, I still get really anxious thinking about the items that he had purchased. I still wonder sometimes if he had purchased those things to torture someone he had kidnapped, because he was definitely capable. Even if I ever get a girlfriend at some point in the future, Valentine's Day will never be the same. We wanted to have a good time together, my girlfriend and I. You see, she's a nurse and has to work the night shift. The hospital she works at requires about 5 years of experience before you can even think of working on day shift. This wouldn't be such a problem, but I work as a marketer. I have a typical 9-to-5 in an office, and it's really tough finding time for each other. Our sleep schedules are chaotic, to say the least. So when Valentine's Day rolled around on a day and night that we were both working, we got really frustrated. It's really hard to explain how you feel like you're being cheated out of time. Like there isn't going to be a moment you can sit down and truly enjoy your relationship for what it is. But we decided that we weren't going to let our lame schedules get the best of us. We decided that we'd visit a city for a weekend away. Valentine's Day fell on a Thursday, but we figured having a little trip that weekend would be the next best thing, maybe even better. She's been really adamant about visiting Oak Ridge in Tennessee. Her grandfather worked there back in the day, and it's always been of interest to her. She's always telling me these facts about how creepy it is and how she just has to go one day. It's roughly an 8-hour drive from where we live, so we made a deal about driving. I was going to drive the entire way there, and she was going to drive while we were actually in the city. She totally got the good deal of the bargain, but that's just what you do when you care for your girlfriend. But something strange happened. Something that has tainted my memory ever since that time. When I think back and remember that weekend away, I'm not thinking about us cuddling up on the couch or any of the fun places we got to visit there either. We got there Friday night. She mostly slept in the car, but still felt really tired. She told me she'd be able to sleep that night we got there and be awake and normal for the next day, so that's just what we did. And it was a really great day. We got to visit a museum and learn about the Manhattan Project. Even got to visit the plant where her grandfather used to work. At least, we're pretty sure. He's deceased now, but the tour guide said this was where the majority of the work on the bombs were done. And well, he worked on them, I guess. It was crazy. Anyway, the day was great, but it didn't last very long. By the time it was dark, we were out of ideas for things to do and, quite frankly, out of energy. We decided to visit our favorite fast food joint, Wendy's. Don't judge us. And she was driving as we made our way there. It was only a 10 to 15 minute drive. She had her music on and I was just kind of looking out the window. At one point, a blue Mustang was beside her car. We were stopped at a red light, and I looked out the window and peered into theirs. I saw a very old man. He looked unhappy, miserable even. His skin looked unnaturally pale. I'm not sure when he started, but he was staring at me. It wasn't until I looked into the car that I noticed it either. Not gonna lie, it kind of freaked me out. We made eye contact for about 5 seconds, and then for the briefest of moments, he smiled. But it was so fast, It must have been a split second that his mouth went into a smile and then back into a frown. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. I looked over at my girlfriend and she hadn't noticed at all. She was jamming out to Bohemian Rhapsody. The light turned green and we were in motion again. I didn't take my eyes off of that car for the rest of that ride. At least, until they turned. That's not the craziest part. You see, it gets even weirder. We were planning on leaving Monday morning, and on Sunday night we went out to eat, but this time to an actual restaurant. We weren't feeling fast food again. We looked on Google and found a local restaurant that had pretty decent reviews. I had my favorite food, deep fried chicken, so off we went. I had completely forgotten about that strange man I saw in that car. But about halfway through my meal, I noticed him again. This time he was in the restaurant. He was staring at me. I know he was. And when I noticed, he did that exact same facial movement, just the way I remembered. He went from a miserable frown, and in a split second, he was smiling only for his face to be frowning again in just the next instant. I'm not sure my reaction was warranted. He hadn't actually done anything wrong to me, and I was enjoying a nice meal with my girlfriend, which is why it was so strange for my fight or flight to kick in, and I went up and confronted him. He was sitting in a booth alone. I asked him why he was staring at us like that. To my absolute surprise, he never said a word, just sat there and frowned at me. I asked him what his problem was before my girlfriend told me it was time we head home. She knows I can get a little worked up and wanted to avoid a confrontation. "It's not illegal to look at people," she said. Still, though, it was something about that man that made me feel so strange, so watched. Well, Monday morning came. We were about an hour into the car ride home, and she was asleep again. And you guessed it. You totally guessed it. I saw this freaky old man again. But this time it was way worse. For starters, he was driving a totally different car. I don't know what this guy's life is like, but I can just imagine what you have to do to be able to afford a Mustang and still have enough money to have a second car. And to make matters even worse, he had been in the left lane as he was going to pass me. But he didn't. He just paced me for about a mile. I noticed that there was a car next to me, and it wasn't until I looked over to flip the bird that I recognized him. It was a creepy old man, but he wasn't frowning anymore. That smile that he'd only been able to muster for a split second was now permanently stained on his aged face. It was the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in my life. Suddenly, he turns his head forward and aggressively veers his car in my direction. Reflexively, I slam the brakes and swerve off to the side of the road. My wife is immediately shaken awake, and all we can see is his vehicle speeding off in the distance through a cloud of dirt. My heart was racing like crazy, and by the time I could process my girlfriend screaming, asking what's going on, I started to feel myself choke up. We discussed whether we should waste our time calling the police, but I was so scared that the best course of action seemed to get out of that godforsaken town as fast as possible. The rest of the ride home happened without incident, and I haven't seen him since. Needless to say, that was the least romantic and most insane Valentine's Day ever. This is probably the weirdest experience that has ever happened to me. One that is causing me a lot of trauma, and seriously has made it difficult to ever date like a normal person ever again. Let me give you some background. I'm a 23-year-old woman. I live in a small town in rural Mississippi. I know everyone in the town and they all know me. I never quite fit in with the small town scene. It wasn't that I was against it or anything, but there just wasn't anyone I really clicked with. I had lots of friends, but I was still completely alone for as long as I can remember. A couple of years ago, I started dating a guy who I met on Tinder. He was from a couple of towns over and wasn't the best looking guy in the world, but I don't let something like that stop me. I just wanted to know if he was nice and compatible with me. So we went out on a couple of dates. Didn't go horribly. He was a perfect gentleman, and every time, he never pressured me into doing anything that I didn't feel comfortable with, which I really appreciated. So after about 3 weeks of casual dates here and there, we made the decision that we really had something here. We both deleted our Tinder accounts together and started spending more time with each other. Honestly, I thought we had a real chance of having a lasting relationship. But as the time went by, I noticed that he was weird. And not the I watch conspiracy theory documentaries on Netflix kind of weird. I mean, I saw some real signs of various mental illnesses. Some of them included narcissistic personality disorder, bipolar disorder, with some extreme episodes of anxiety and depression. And he would eventually go insane over some of these things that stressed him out. So one of the times he got into one of those episodes was when his uncle was going to visit. His parents asked him to sleep on the couch so his uncle could sleep in his bed, and he had a literal mental breakdown. I remember me and him texting back and forth, and he was asking me if it was a good idea to physically attack him or start a fight. A few more incidents like that, and I knew that I had to end this relationship quick. As much as I want to help people, I really don't want to sacrifice my own well-being for the sake of helping anyone else. It was probably 3 or 4 weeks into our relationship that I made the decision. I asked him if he wanted to get some coffee, and he agreed. We broke up, and he actually took it rather well, which surprised me. I wasn't expecting him to have some kind of breakdown, and while he did look sad, he didn't act inappropriately towards me at all. He had a solid frown on his face. Then he walked away. I felt bad for doing it, but that was the decision that I made. Now we get into the weird part. In the couple of weeks that we've been dating, he had never been to my house and had no idea where I lived. That's going to be important to remember a little later on. We probably broke up around April or so. It seems to be somewhere in that time frame at least, so you can understand the terror that washed over me when I saw his car parked in my driveway almost a year later, on Valentine's Day. It had been so long since I had last seen him. I didn't even recognize his car at first. You can bet your rear end that I had my pistol with me ready to protect myself, especially because my parents weren't home. Remember, I live in rural Mississippi. People don't just randomly show up at your house who live 2 towns away. It just doesn't happen like that. He got out of his car holding flowers. I couldn't believe myself. What the heck is wrong with this guy, I thought. I walked up to him, making sure to keep my pistol out of sight. I didn't want to alarm him, but I was ready to use it if he had bad intentions. His face looked strange. He looked like he hadn't slept in days. He also looked like he was really struggling and uncomfortable. I asked him what he was doing here after we just kind of looked at each other for a minute, and then he said it. "Will you be my Valentine?" The moment he began to speak, I knew he was intoxicated. And it honestly frightened me. I had heard too many horror stories that start out exactly this way. I pulled my gun out and pointed at him. I screamed, "No, get away from my home and never come back." He genuinely seemed startled at the sight of the gun. Then he got going to his car and drove away. But as he ran, I noticed that he dropped something metal in the hurry. It must have just barely nudged out of his pocket. After he sped off, I waited a few minutes just to make sure he was gone. Then I walked over towards the object that he dropped on the floor. I couldn't make it out at first because of the darkness. I picked it up and put it under my phone light. I was mortified. It was a pair of metal handcuffs. Just imagine how much he must have thought about me. That he waited all this time. Building up the nerve to just randomly show up at my house with a pair of freaking handcuffs, ready to do God knows what to me. It was honestly quite horrifying. I called the police and reported him. They couldn't really do anything, seeing as he technically didn't commit a crime, so I made sure to tell my family and friends to watch out for him if they happened to see his vehicle around. I just imagine how different my life would be if I hadn't been armed that night. I was all alone, and my parents wouldn't have been home for hours. There was a solid chance of him kidnapping me and becoming someone you see on a true crime documentary. This has been a big reminder for me, and let it be a lesson for anyone listening right now. If you're defenseless and alone in the middle of nowhere, make sure that you have some way of protecting yourself, because I'm sure that I'm not the only girl in the world he's ever going to try this stunt on again. A couple of years ago, me and my husband decided that we were sick of the pressures of Valentine's Day, the cards, the flowers, the last-minute bookings, and so on. Instead, decided that we'd make a whole week out of it. We thought if we could spread the romance over a period of 7 days, it wouldn't be as wearing, and we both wouldn't feel that stress every couple feels in the weeks leading up to it. So, living in the UK, we decided that it wouldn't be too hard to get to Lake Geneva, find a cabin we could rent for the week, remote, with perhaps a little restaurant a little drive away, and settle down. My husband spent some of his childhood there, and this gave him an opportunity to stop in on some of his old friends and family whilst we were there. It sounded like the perfect trip. We booked time off of work, scrolled some websites, and ended up finding this lovely semi-resort. It was essentially a collection of cabins or lodges made for couples. They were all fairly far apart from each other, but were connected by small gravel paths to a central area, which had a restaurant owned by a fairly famous chef, a lodge that acted as reception, and a spa. There were some facilities dotted around, but all with appropriate architecture, so even though it was pretty much a resort, it would never feel like it. Sure, it was a little expensive, but we saw it as an opportunity to combine a holiday and expensive Valentine's dinner. In a weird way, we thought we were saving money. The staff there were all incredibly polite when we arrived. They knew our names instantly from our online booking and made sure to whisk our bags away almost instantly. Whilst they went through the process of booking us in, they gave us each a complimentary cocktail and sat us by this vast glass window that overlooked the lake. It was unbelievably stunning and so quiet. That was what we appreciated the most, I think. A break from city life, somewhere where we wouldn't have to worry about the crowded bus or getting a cab after one too many glasses of wine. We were coming to the end of our cocktails when a man came and sat down next to us. He introduced himself as Luca and had one of those funny European accents where you can't quite place it. The English accent was almost perfect, but a couple of clipped vowels and funny consonants meant you could instantly tell he wasn't actually, well, English. He seemed friendly enough, tall, athletic, wearing white tennis clothes. He asked us where we were from, and we said the UK, and we chatted for a little while about that. I do remember him saying that I looked just like his wife and that we should meet her. I remember that because I kept looking out for my doppelganger whenever we'd take walks around the resort, trying to see if I could spy curly blonde hair. We said that we were sure we'd catch him either in the restaurant or perhaps the spa, and were intrigued to meet his wife. He seemed a little odd in his own way. His eye contact was a little too intense, and he spoke a little too loudly, but being British, we thought that maybe this was just a cultural difference. Unfortunately, February isn't the best time for a trip to a resort in Switzerland. The weather there can be pretty up and down, and for a lot of our time there, we were pretty much rained out of doing anything outside. But we were a married couple, and it wasn't hard to find things to do around Valentine's Day that required being inside. Lucas' cabin must have been close to ours because we'd see him fairly often, on our walk to breakfast, passing through when we were having lunch, that sort of thing. I decided pretty quickly that I didn't like him. I decided that it wasn't a cultural difference, that he was actually quite rude and would always try to steer the conversation back to himself whenever we'd have a quick chat. He'd make a point of humble bragging about whatever he was off to do, and it began to make me angry. I was, at the end of the day, trying to have a week with my husband, and it was kind of ruining it. My husband snores loud, and so quite often in the middle of the night, I'll get up and move to the sofa. It's sort of become a little ritual, and I don't mind really doing it. I can usually fall back asleep pretty quickly, if not instantly. Earplugs only go so far when you can genuinely feel the guy vibrating as he snores. Trust me. So the second night we're there, I get up and move to the couch in the front, which faces a huge glass panel overlooking the lake. I have to turn on a lamp to find my way around, not knowing the layout of the room off by heart like I do at home, and I see the window. The view is stunning, and even at night, if you sit and watch for a while and let your eyes adjust to the dark, you can make out lights across the water and begin to see the scenery. I was watching the view like this when I spotted something. It's funny how you can make out shapes in the dark, but I'd gotten used to the way the branches of the trees moved in the slight wind, which was why I noticed something so still. Still, and in the shape of shoulders and a head. It was down the path a little way, the path that led into the resort, and it just stood there, watching something. I became very aware at that point of the lamp that was going on, and the fact that although this figure was just a dark shape to me, it could see right in and see me. I began to feel really, really scared. I didn't want to panic, but I started by saying my husband's name very quietly, then a little louder, then louder until I could hear the slight panic in my voice. The figure didn't move. It must have been about 100 feet away because I couldn't make out any features, just a shape. I called again and my husband came out of his room. He asked what was wrong, and when I tried to show him what I'd seen, the figure was gone. I guess it had seen someone else come into the house and had decided to leave. I explained what I'd seen, and although my husband was supportive, he said at that distance, at night, it could have been anything. Could have just been a member of staff doing a nighttime check or a security guard. Whatever it was, despite his snoring, I slept in his room for the rest of the night. The next day we had breakfast as usual. Luca came past and chatted to us for a little while. I didn't say anything. I began to become a little convinced that it had been Luca who had been watching me that night. I hated the way he talked about his wife whilst looking at me, as if just because we looked the same we were somehow connected. Although there was still a little anxiety from last night, I managed to enjoy most of the day. That night we slept in the same bed and I made sure to choose the side closest to the wall. Then, it was Valentine's Day. Since our plan was to have the whole week to do it, we took it easy, having a late brunch at the restaurant. Just when I thought that maybe Luca had left, he came past. I thought it was strange that he wasn't with his wife, but he said something about her going on ahead to get a good court for tennis. We said we were considering an afternoon game, and I remember him seeming a little concerned. He told us that they were all booked up, and that he thought that maybe we'd have better luck booking a day or two in advance. We were a little disappointed, but hey, it allowed us to have a Bloody Mary after brunch, so we weren't complaining. That night we got drunk after dinner, like, really drunk. I think we got a little carried away on their two-for-one Valentine's cocktails because we were giggling like schoolchildren. We chatted to a few of the other couples we'd met, ate some amazing food, watched the rain on the lake. Thankfully, Luca was nowhere to be seen. We stumbled back to our cabin, sharing an umbrella lent to us by the staff, and after doing what couples would do on Valentine's Day, my husband fell asleep. I lay in bed a while, had a couple of glasses of water from the sink to try and prevent the hangover I knew was coming. After I stopped the tap running, I thought I heard the drain stutter for a second. I listened a little closer. No, it wasn't a stutter. It was a noise like knocking, only a little more frantic. In triplets, dum, dum, dum. I listened again, the same noise, louder. Then I realized what it was. Someone was trying the lock on the window. They were trying to see if it was locked. As I stood there trying to make as little noise as possible as I moved across the room to wake my husband, I heard footsteps moving around the cabin, and then the same noise, but louder. The same person was trying the door now, but they were more determined, really pushing and pulling. I didn't want to make a noise, but I shook my husband as violently as I could to wake him up and whispered what I thought was happening. He was dead to the world, and as I tried to wake him with a hushed voice, I could hear whatever it was trying the door a few last times, but harder. Finally, he woke up and saw the panic in my eyes. He got straight to it, turned on every light in the cabin, and grabbed a broom as he made his way to the front door. There was nothing. No one. I was sure, though, and he could tell from how I was acting that I was serious. We called the resort's security, who came over and were extremely polite, and even the manager of the place came down to assure us that it was all fine. They said they'd look into it, that sometimes the wind made noises like that, and were even so kind as to make sure a security member sat outside our cabin for the rest of the night. There were no signs that anyone had been around, and so they said if we were sure we wanted to report something, they'd happily come with us in the morning. As we were talking the next morning, I felt like I wanted to mention Luca, but didn't want to seem paranoid. But I'd barely slept and my mouth seemed to run on its own. I mentioned that Luca had always acted strange to us and that I thought his cabin might have been near ours. They told me that whilst it wasn't their policy to report on guests, they could tell me that Luca's cabin was actually fairly far away from ours. His was in the singles area, for people on retreats, writers, artists, etc. And that the couple's area was the other side of the resort. I mentioned that his wife must have been staying near us then, or something like that, and I remember the woman behind the desk looking puzzled. She said Luca came alone, left after lunch on Valentine's Day, and that there had been no woman with him at any point during his stay. He'd come alone and left alone. They'd have known any visitors have to at least sign in at reception. When I mentioned looking into this further, I was really rattled by the whole thing. They said although they would flag it with local police, there wasn't much they could do. Luca wasn't a Swiss national, and they couldn't follow him just because a guest thought that he might have been stalking them or something of the sort. They asked if I'd even seen Luca during either of the encounters I'd had, and sadly, I had to say no. When they heard that, they shared a look that I could instantly tell meant they didn't quite believe me. The resort offered all sorts of compensations, a free dinner the next night, and even offered me a discount on a week's stay another time. Despite the offer, I don't think we'll be going back anytime soon.